Blog Talk Radio.
Go With Angels is more than the title of Mary Brotherton's debut book. It's her wish for you and your loved ones. Join her on her podcast every Friday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time as she talks about angels and messengers from the spirit world. Of course, she'll talk about her book and the inspiration behind it, too. Call 516-418-5651 after 11 on Friday mornings to share your stories about angelic encounters.
Hello, everybody. I am thrilled to be here with you today. I'm doing the show live, so I can take callers if anyone wants to call in on Friday, October 18th. That's the time to do it. My number is 516-418-5651. And if you've been listening to the show, you know that it took me 40 years to get out of my own way and write my little book called Go With Angels. Just because I wasn't listening to the voices, I wasn't heeding what they were telling me, but I knew that I'd seen angels, I'd experienced them in my life many, many times. And sometimes the angels might not be specifically angels, might be a voice from our loved one, could be the voice of God himself or herself, whom I call Gus, God, Universe, Spirit, Source. God has no gender. The angels have no gender. Those are things that we attribute because that's how we see the world. We don't know any better. We don't know any different. So today I want to read to you a story that is absolutely true. It came from my life. It's called, oh, heavens to Betsy, I just moved something and my screen went totally wonky doodle. And as soon as I get everything back up here, I will continue, start reading. Okay, there we go. Just needed to move something out of the way. This story is called If You Want to Live, Leave. I've never regretted trust. I have regretted not trusting. I especially regret not trusting my heart. I once thought that some of my better actions were churned from my mind because I'm a smart person, I'm intellectual, I'm educated. But I no longer believe this. When I came home from work to discover that my ex-husband had accidentally overdosed our son with cold medication, I didn't ponder the choices. I acted. And the doctors told me that by rushing him to the emergency room rather than calling for an ambulance or waiting to see if he was okay, I saved his life. It was the only thing I thought I could do. But I don't know if I was acting from my head, which told me my son needed medical attention, or was I responding from a mother's loving heart? I know that I'm a contemplative extrovert. I love being around people, but I can spend hours analyzing or planning, reminiscing, or simply musing about events. I can spend days not speaking to another human being except through email or possibly phone calls. A woman, I am emotional. I sometimes have conflicting feelings between what's within my gray matter and what really matters. When I was 18, I planned my first wedding down to every bead I personally sewed onto my custom-made gown, and I thought about how perfect my new life would be. My head told me I was marrying the ideal man. He had a great job, loved his family, wanted children, and seemed to adore me. What more could a naive young woman want? Initially, his great job provided necessities for our new life together. But my heart longed for his companionship, not his long hours at work. I was delighted he loved his family, but my own family ties suffered as he isolated me and cocooned me into his world, away from mine. Our oldest son proved to be the center of his father's universe, a burden no child should endure. I soon learned the thin line between adoration and obsession blurs and often obscures reality. Nevertheless, I remained married for 25 years, certain I had made the right decision when I followed my head, ignored the subtle hints from my heart, and abandoned those closest to me. As an intelligent person, I convinced myself that my mind would never mislead me. Every day in that marriage, when I felt suffocated, stifled, or belittled, I considered where I might have been the one who went down the wrong path. I refused to listen to my wonderful heart when it told me, "If you want to live, leave." I listened instead to the messages I had allowed him to program into my head. The message from my heart never changed and grew stronger than the flickering doubts and rationalization within my head. For 2 years, every single day, especially after I had gone into contemplative prayer, which is similar to meditation, I would hear, "If you want to live, leave." When I finally found the courage and the strength to listen to my heart, I shielded the messages from my mind that told me how hard life would be for a middle-aged, single mother struggling to finish her college degree. "If you want to live, leave" is not a message of reason. This is the message from the intuitive heart. For 2 years, I heard the heart message repeating, and I struggled to make sense of it with my mind. My ex-husband was not physically abusive. Instead, he used his insecurity, jealousy, and paranoia to strike me down with a terror he fought to hide. Until I was freed from his control, I had never realized how powerful his influence and command over my life had been. In the years since, I've listened to my heart more. I later came to believe that these intuitions, these messages from my heart, were actually the voice of God urging me to pursue a new path. "If you want to live, leave" wasn't a message of concern for my physical life, but a message for my sanity, my spirituality, and my well-being. I followed my heart when I left my rural hometown and a decent job to begin life with the man 15 years younger, both of us starting new careers in Atlanta. I did not consult my head when I agreed to marry him. I have no regrets about that, because my heart gives good advice. Some time ago, I joined an association, and it was for writers, you know, an organization for writers. And at one of the meetings, I met a man that my heart insisted was not right. I listened to my head and gave him a chance to see how he treated me before I judged him. I've since discovered he's a convicted pedophile. My heart knew. More recently, a community leader invited me to be his special guest at an invitation-only trade show. My heart told me this could be a great marketing opportunity, but my heart nagged. "It's a bad idea. Don't go." I learned he uses opportunities like this to pursue women inappropriately. Given the time and choice to think about my decisions, I can always rationalize reasons for behaviors. I excused 25 years of emotional abuse and psychological trauma, ignored my heart's repeated alerts about a dangerous pedophile, but I did not make that day trip alone with this so-called leader. From then on, I have been listening with my heart. If you want to live, leave, was a message from my heart, which is where the angels dwell. And listening to that message has opened up amazing new worlds for me. I wonder if I had listened to it immediately instead of waiting more than 2 years, would my life now feel any more magical? What messages have you been ignoring? If you keep thinking about something or you keep hearing a message repeating while you're praying, it might be your angels trying to get your attention. If you keep thinking over and over, hey, I should call so-and-so, but then you immediately dismiss it because you think you have nothing to talk about or you don't want to bother that person, call them. Don't waste any time. There's a reason that you're getting the message, and the reason is most likely coming from your angels. Now, I'm going to play something, and then I'm going to find another story to read.
Hello, beautiful lady. I've been meaning to find 5 minutes to reach out to you to thank you from the bottom of my heart, and Mary Krause, who I call the Countess, for the two beautiful books. I'm dying to get in and really dig into your first book. My surgery's on hold right now because we know how finances go. But I wanted to let you know I would like to buy one of the children's books. One of my dear, dear friends lost her husband Saturday. He was only 33 years old to cancer. He found out 3 weeks ago he had cancer and he's gone. And your book came the same day. And I said, okay, this is not a coincidence whatsoever. And she has, her oldest son is 2, her youngest son is 1. I did send her a couple of pictures of your book, and I said, Stephanie, I'd really love to purchase one of these books for you. So let me know how I can purchase it, and if I could have you sign it, and I'll just tell you what their names are to write in the book. It is such a... Hello, beautiful lady.
Well, I hit the button again incorrectly at the wrong time, but that's okay. I'm back with a story called Angels Walk Among Us. Now, this goes back to before the story I read before. That I don't have them in any chronological order. I had been married about 20 years when my ex started asking me, "Are you really happy?" I had told everybody I was. When the man I married persisted with his question about my happiness, I started to wonder if maybe he was the one who was unhappy and wanted me to admit it first. I'd been taught that marriage was forever and we should lie in the beds we'd made, so my happiness actually seemed irrelevant. Still, after several months of his daily questions about my happiness, the seeds he had been sowing were taking root. Maybe a year after his first question about how happy I was, he said, "If you ever find another man you think you would rather be with than me, please don't slip around to be with him. Come to me and tell me so we'll part as friends." Folks, that felt like a slap in my face. At that point, I had never thought of another man. We got married 6 months after graduating from high school. He was my first lover. He had been my only lover for 25 years. More time passed when he gut-punched me with some other words. He said, "I hope you're not going to let your family make us get a divorce." This was the first time I'd heard anything about anyone in my family interfering in my marriage. No one had suggested we get a divorce except him. This confused me, so I quickly made an appointment to speak with my spiritual advisor, who was also my pastor and my friend. He very wisely told me, "Mary, give him time. Let him cool down and see how you feel in a few days. Don't rush into anything." Well, by this time, I had been married 25 years. And while he never physically harmed me, he constantly whittled at my self-esteem and found ways to belittle my accomplishments. He didn't nurture me, feed my soul, or provide much comfort. I didn't know what I wanted from the marriage any longer, let alone what I wanted from him. I was conflicted. I grew discontent and restless, so I decided to take university classes at night, after work. There, I met a rather bizarre angel named Bonnie. She looked like a university advisor. She said she was a Reiki practitioner, and she was extremely intuitive. She actually looked like she'd be more comfortable on a motorcycle than in an office. She had extremely long, bright red fingernails, long hair, pulled back in a ponytail, and she was dressed in black. We had met just moments before she told me, "You've been pondering a situation for a while, and I am here to tell you that you should go forward with your plans. Know that you are fully supported." Now, I know that her statement could have been applied to situations as simple as getting a new hairstyle, buying a car, maybe taking another Spanish class. But I knew that she was referring to my decision to make a decision. I needed to tell my ex I wanted a divorce. I was surprised at how easy it was for me to tell Bonnie and how few tears I shed on hearing myself speak the words that I had not dared speak aloud even to myself. She gave me the courage to speak what was within my heart simply by being present and offering me an emotionally safe space to release my burden. Bonnie listened as I told her why I'd been hesitating, putting myself through agony by living with the man I did not love. I cried when I said if he died, I would be spared the pain of causing him pain. Until that moment, I hadn't dared to fully consciously consider that I no longer loved him. She pointed out the obvious. "This pain might be what each of you needs to grow and develop." I said, "You know, this decision will create." Some people will probably hate me because of it. When they see me throw away a man they consider a gem, it won't be easy for many of them. She and I discussed why my concerns had more to do with other people's perceptions than with my own personal contentment. And she helped me see for the first time that my happiness has value and my peaceful spirit has worth. "If you wait for the perfect time," Bonnie said, "you'll die unhappy. There's no such thing as the right time or the right way." Folks, she is so right. There is no such thing as the right time or the right way. Well, I didn't rush home to announce my decision, but I did feel a sublime sense of freedom at having made the decision that changed my life. I started creating a plan. Still, looking for a gentle way to end the marriage. Eventually, my ex forced me to state my intention to move out. That story is called Inside the Light, and I read that either last week or the week before. Bonnie's message of support continues to encourage me to follow my heart and trust my intuition. I believe she was an angel because I never saw her after our brief encounter that one day. Our encounter gave me the courage to simply choose my own path. Now, I never saw Bonnie. I should have seen her in the hall once or twice after that, but I never, ever saw her again. I've had many angels appear in my life simply to deliver one message, and then I never heard from them again. Have you ever met someone you thought could be a lifelong friend, only to have them vanish shortly after you received an important message? Angels do that sometimes. So, let me see. I want to find another story. Well, you know what? I'm just going to flip to the next story here. It's called My Junkyard Lexus. And this is a story that I really love to tell over and over and over again. Excuse me. It's a contrast between my current husband, whom I call my best husband, because he's my best friend. And he is my best husband and my first husband, who gaslighted me, manipulated things, changed the truth, outright lied to me. This guy, Curtis, is just a totally different thing. And there's a story in my book called Go With Angels. It's called Bud and BJ, that talks about how they brought us together. This story is called My Junkyard Lexus. Curtis, my second husband and my best husband, is a car enthusiast. He goes to car shows, talks with other car aficionados, watches movies and videos about cars, belongs to several car social media groups and forums, and is always on the lookout for another great car bargain. I'd been content with my Toyota 4Runner and didn't see any need to replace it. Yet Curtis had often talked about how he wanted to buy me a Lexus sedan because he felt it would be more economical and more comfortable for me to drive. He wasn't wrong. From the day we bought the 4Runner, I've had to put a pillow behind my back to drive because we can't get the seat to adjust. The heater works perfectly fine in the summertime, and at least one check light stays on despite his meticulous maintenance habits. There's a wire, Lucy says, and it's difficult to get to, so he just hasn't fixed it, and I've learned to live with it. One Saturday, he called to tell me, "You're now the proud owner of a 2001 Lexus GS300. Well, I'm going to give you a little side note here, folks. I didn't know what in the heck he was talking about. I knew what a Lexus was. It's like a souped-up Toyota. But I didn't know what GS300 meant. I know what a Toyota 4Runner looks like. I know what a Toyota Camry looks like, a Toyota Supra, a Toyota Corolla, Toyota Crown. I know those because they're names, and I can put that, an image with it. A GS300? What is that? It meant nothing to me. I challenged him, partly because I didn't know he was car shopping, let alone I didn't know he was planning to buy one without my input. How do you know I'm proud? I asked. Now, let me tell you, folks. He said I was a proud owner of a 2001 Lexus GS300. The year 2001 has slipped into memory several years before, so I knew it wasn't a new car. He said, "Trust me, you are going to love this car." Well, I trust Curtis with far more than deciding which car I would be driving. But I resisted getting excited about this. I mean, for crying out loud, he hadn't been gone very long. He was just out running errands. I didn't understand where he'd gotten the car or why. He said, I had to go to the junkyard for parts, and this baby was just sitting there waiting for you. I'll come home for you, and we can look at it together. If you don't like it, we don't have to keep it. But I did pay cash for it. Cash? I asked. You never keep that kind of money on you. How much did you pay for this piece of junk anyway? I was already envisioning months, if not years, with this car in the fixer-up portion of our garage. He said, I charged it on the credit card. Only $2,500. It's worth every penny, I promise. And I can remember when this man could not get credit beyond $300. And here he was just charging willy-nilly, I thought, $2,500 on a credit card. I really thought he was out of his mind, but he was right. The car was in great condition. It had been considered a junk car only because the previous owner wanted original Lexus parts after an accident, and the insurance company refused. It had made more sense to the company to total the car. So the people at the junkyard replaced the parts, shined it up, and put a for sale sign on it. Curtis and I agreed that he should drive it home to check for anomalies, and I'd take the 4Runner since I was very comfortable driving it. Before we started our drive home, Curtis texted me a photo. Look at the odometer reading. It says 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. This car was meant for you. He knows that I find meaning in numbers that repeat or show up in sequence, and said that he felt our angels had led him to this car for us. Years later, it was still safely getting me to new adventures. Now, if you're curious, the number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 is an angelic assurance that your prayers have been heard and they're working to help manifest your positive changes into your life. It's also a sign of stability and security in your life. I thought that was kind of neat. It's just one of the stories that I really, really enjoyed. Just kind of cool. Now here's a short little story that I want to share with you called Miss T and Marge P, and it goes back to the intuitive aspect that I first started today's show with. I was still in my 30s. I'm almost 70 now. I was still in my 30s when I discovered that God's voice can sound very much like a dear friend's on a phone call. Also, God's voice can feel like a hunch, a gut feeling, or a random thought. My sons were still in elementary school when we met the woman they call Miss T. Her last name originated in France, which made it difficult for some to pronounce. Her husband's job moved him and the family from Wisconsin to South Carolina, where we met at church. She and I became good friends, and together we befriended others in our church community. A few years later, the business that had brought her family to our town swept them back to Wisconsin. We maintained our long-distance friendship with letters, cards, and the occasional phone call during the pre-cell phone era. When her husband announced that he no longer required her services after their 5 children all moved out, she'd fly to South Carolina for some sunshine during the winters and stayed at our home. We grew much closer during those visits. One day, a few months after her last visit, she surprised me with an unscheduled phone call, because we would usually send letters and say, I'd like to call you on, you know, October 18th or whatever. She said, Mary, you need to call Marge P. I said, you know what's funny? She's been on my mind. She said, I know. Why haven't you called her? So I asked my friend, Mary, Miss T, what would you say to her? What would I say to her? She's always been your friend, not mine. I told Miss T that I'd often think about calling Marge, but since her children were much older than mine, we had little in common. A few days would pass and I'd think of calling her again, but always I found an excuse not to call. Why did you call to tell me to call her? Why don't you just call her yourself? I asked. Miss T said, because you need to call her, not me. God told me to call you, since you haven't been listening to him. He said you might listen to me. Wait, I said, God talks to you? She said, yes, he talks to you too, but you keep ignoring him. She explained to me how God often gives us thoughts that seem really out of context, like, call Miss Marge T, in an effort to get our attention. She told me, if you keep thinking that you should call someone, you really should, because it costs too much for me to keep calling long distance just because you're too hard-headed to listen to God. We both laughed when I told her that I guess she was being used to amplify God's voice loud enough for me to hear it. She insisted that as soon as I hung up, I was to call Marge P, and you can bet I did just that. What started as a simple thought that I should call a woman I barely knew turned into a lesson in one of the many ways God speaks to us and how, when we don't listen, God will find another way to get our attention. Marge and I remained friends until she died, but I won't be surprised if I hear from her again one day. After all, she doesn't need a mutual friend on the phone to get my attention any longer. Like the angels, she can reach out and talk to me personally, and I promise I won't make her leave voicemail. Now, I want to tell you a little bit about something that happened to me actually early this morning that surprised me. And it didn't surprise me, but my mother's sister, Connie, was 7 years older than she was. She was 92 when she passed away, years before my mother died at 87. And my mother's been gone more than 10 years. Actually, I just realized something. Okay, that explains so much. I had gotten sick to my stomach on Monday, inexplicably. And Monday was the anniversary of my mother's death, and I had not thought of it. Interesting. But my mother's sister, Aunt Connie, had never... Oh, she and I were real close in life, real close. We just were. I don't know why. But I'm thinking she's probably been dead more than 15 years, probably closer to 20. And all this time, I've never heard her. But early this morning, at the angel hour, around 4 o'clock, I heard someone call my name, Mary. And I thought, boy, that sounds like how Aunt Connie used to call my name. And then I thought I was going to drift back to sleep. And I just saw her standing there. Just her sweet, sweet smile on her face. And I said, well, Aunt Connie, I see you, but you're so distant, it seems. I said, I can barely hear you. I can barely see you. There really was a veil between us. And so I said, I hope you'll find a way to come back and talk to me. If you have a message for me, I really want to hear it. Now, since I've been talking with the angels and since I wrote this book, either I or psychic friends of mine who are much closer to the people on the other side have gotten messages from both of my paternal grandparents, my father's mother and father. I've gotten messages myself ever since my mother died. She used to come and visit me at 4 o'clock in the morning, the angel hour, and we would just sit together sometimes and visit. And then one morning, I actually have a story in here about that. Let me see if I can find it real fast. I think that I think better when I write. Here it is. It was the first page I flipped to in the back of the book. I knew it was in the back. It's called Go Haunt Jane. After my mother died, I was constantly reminded of her through things she'd left behind, such as photos or journals. And when I'd see one of her favorite flowers, whenever I'd see an Alfred Dunner label while shopping, I thought of my mother. She often came to visit me after her funeral. Shortly after 4 every morning, I'd hear her call sharply, Mary. There was no mistaking whose voice had awakened me. I'd wrap a small blanket around my shoulders, because she died in October. And sometimes in October, in Florida even, it can get cold. But I'd wrap a small blanket around my shoulders, make a cup of tea, and sit with Mama. We often didn't do more than sit together, which we had done just like that. We'd get up in the morning, wrap a blanket around our shoulders, and sit together while she was alive. She would drink her coffee, and I would drink my tea, and we didn't talk. I frequently told her during these times, you're welcome to come to visit, but you're also welcome to move on to the other side. So after a few weeks of her daily visits, she came at her usual time. But this time she seemed unhappy and she yelled, Jane Marie, my sister's full name. I didn't bother with the blanket or the tea, but I went to our chair and I told her, Mama, if you want to haunt me, that's fine. I'll wake up early every morning just for you. But if you want to haunt Jane, I suggest you go yell at her in her house and leave me alone for a while. 7 years passed before she came to visit me again. She doesn't visit every day. So just like in life, when she comes to visit with me, I treasure these moments. Have you ever been visited by a deceased loved one? Were you frightened or comforted? Have you ever asked yourself why you feel the way you do? Well, I had a caller, and I thought it was Dion. I haven't had a chance to check, but anyway, my caller's gone. I've got 5 minutes left on the show, and now that I look at my list of numbers, I see that it wasn't Dion. I'm sorry that you called into the show and I didn't respond immediately, but I've learned that if I don't finish reading, it's not a good thing for my brain. So anyway, I want to thank you for calling in, even though I did miss talking to you. And I tell you what, if you're listening, I've got 5 minutes left. So if you want to call back, that'll be fine. If you don't want to call back, that'll be fine. but I have a deck of cards called Angels and Auras, Oracle cards from Radley Valentine and Douglas Fraser, given to me by my dear, dear friend, whose name just slipped my mind, Karen Eberle. Quite often, Karen comes on the show, but she's been dealing with some health issues, and so she hasn't been able to join us. But she used to come in on the third Friday of every month, and this would have been her time to be on the show. So I'm going to shuffle. What? Oh, shucks. I got a handful of cards that just jumped out at me. That doesn't happen often. I mean, it's a lot of cards. I don't know that these, I think that would be a mistake. But the first card in that stack is Haniel and the Silver Aura for the goddess, psychic, sacred, and proud energy. So let me see what Radley Valentine and Douglas Fraser have to say about that. And da-da-da-da-da, let's see. All right, here we go. Finally, there's a lot of stuff in here before you actually get to reading the actual cards. And I haven't done much work with this deck, so I don't have a lot of experience with the book. And I don't know what this card means, but I can tell you this about Haniel. I wrote about her in my book called A Journey with Angels. And Haniel uses a silver light ray, not silver, silver aura is what they're talking about. She uses the pink light ray to work with you. And she is a healing angel. So when you're very, very sick, you can call on Haniel to come and physically touch you if you want to. But here's what the book says. Archangel Haniel's name means the grace of God. And she appears in the silvery hue of the moon. That is true. She is known for helping people to develop their personal spiritual strengths. See, right now we're in the midst of a full moon. No wonder her card came up. She is also the archangel focused on women's issues as well as their health. Haniel is like the great moon goddess of the archangel realm, along with all the issues the moon represents. Topics like femininity, intuition, emotion, and home. Luminous silver energy is described as the color of goddess energy, and it naturally heightens the vibration of home. Your first experience of silver light was in the womb, where your mother's body literally created a safe and sacred space for you to grow. Directly connected to intuition and the glow of the moon, silver light comes to you as a reminder to trust your intuition. It is also a message that your space is sacred and reflects beauty as well as connection. And I think that's the perfect way to end the show. So I will say thank you, thank you, thank you. Thank you to Carrie Stanley for her testimony. Thank you to Tony for creating our intro and outro. Thank you to Bonnie, the angel that I met many years ago and got sage wisdom from. And thank you to you who are listening. Be sure that you always go with angels everywhere.
Thanks for listening to Go With Angels with Mary Brotherton. If you want to order a copy of Go With Angels, just reach out to mary@beunique.org for details. That's BUNEKE.org. And be sure to tune in every Friday morning at 11 a.m. Eastern Time for more stories about angelic encounters. Follow Be Unique Radio on Blog Talk Radio so you don't miss a single episode.